Bulls are out of timeouts. 2 seconds left. Giddy for the win.
Through the city where the legends play, Chi-town vibes on a sunny day. Big red bus with the seats in line, talking Bulls all day, we stay on the grind. Rolling down the lane in the big red bus, see Red, Fred, and Doug bring the Bulls to discuss. From the Jordan days to the present fuss, it's gold in the convo, so ride with us. Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Big Red Bus as we take the glorious monstrosity out onto the streets in Chicago. I look to my right, and it's not the Podfather who's working late in his real-time job, but I have the great Drew Stevens in the bus today. How you doing, Drew?
Fred, I am glad to be here. First time on the bus. It's a glorious vehicle, I must say. Trying to fill in for the Podfather himself. I'm sorry that I wasn't able to pod with him as well, but it's great to be here.
Well, Drew, I've always been a fan of your work on X, and that's where I kind of started, basically, over a decade ago. And the things that really caught my eye about you, Drew, I loved, is like you would start the day, peace be with you, just real positive. You know, everything is so negative. There's just a sea of negativity. But these little positive statements from you really caught my eye. I'm just a huge fan. I always loved your insights on the Bulls. So it's an honor to have you on the bus. Thank you for coming on.
Man, it's a pleasure to be here, and I appreciate you asking me on.
So let's get a little bit into your background. Just offline, you shared with me that you're a little bit, about 20 years older than I expected. But that's all good. I'd love to hear how you got started in this. And first of all, you from Chicago? Where did you go to high school? And, you know, have you been a lifelong Bulls fan?
Yeah, so I'm born and raised here in Chicago, Bronzeville area. I went to high school at De La Salle Institute, played basketball there. Always been a Bulls fan since as long as I can remember. I was very fortunate enough to, you know, have my primitive years be when Michael Jordan was at his height and the Bulls themselves were at their height. So, yeah, man, it was hard not to be a Bulls fan growing up and watching him and watching the Bulls do what they did. And it's funny because I've seen these promotions for, you know, basketball coming back on Amazon and NBC using the theme song. And as soon as I hear that theme song, like, I think back to those Jordan-led teams and spending, like, you know, Mother's Day, Easter, parts of the summer sitting around the TV with my family watching Bulls games, watching them play the Knicks or whoever it was they were playing in the playoffs and later in the finals. Like, it's very nostalgic to hear that tune. It brought back some very, very fond memories, I must say.
Well, I did not know you were a fellow Catholic leaguer. I played at St. Lawrence a little bit earlier than you, unfortunately a lot earlier than you, but De La Salle always had an immense amount of respect for that school and the people who went there. So that's great to hear. So then you come out, you majored in journalism, is that correct?
I did, at SIU Carbondale. I majored in it, graduated with a degree in journalism. Had a couple of internships in Iowa and Mobile, Alabama, but then kind of got off path and kind of worked some overnight jobs, and that led to me kind of transitioning into personal training, and then from personal training to physical therapy, which is my regular 9-to-5 gig to this day. But when the pandemic hit, I ended up starting to write a little bit more, and it was really The Last Dance that kind of sparked me to want to write again, and that led to me kind of reconnecting with one of my fellow Salukis who worked at the Daily Egyptian, our school newspaper, while I was down there. He had his own, you know, media company. We are Regal Radio War Media. So I ended up writing for them, and that led to many other opportunities, you know, On Tap Sports, and now with the Bigs, and have an opportunity to talk hoops with another Saluki, Cameron Smith, over at CHSN. Right. So it's just been a wild, surreal ride, man. It feels like a dream. Anytime I walk into United Center, it never gets old. I don't take it for granted, and it's amazing, man. Like, I almost have to pinch myself.
Well, I got to say, you were a great addition to that. Well, I think is an all-star level of writers and you know, commentators who cover the Chicago Bulls. Like, every guy in that room, you know, start obviously with Casey Johnson, who's kind of like the godfather of it. Every one of these people, even Joe Colley, who I battle quite a bit on X, but everybody is fantastic. And I learned different things, and I think we're really blessed to have such a good beat writer, you know, group of writers covering the Chicago Bulls. Will Gottlieb, obviously the GOAT, and everybody, yeah. You know, everybody associated with it. So it was funny. I listened to every press conference, and I'd hear this guy ask these questions. I'm like, man, that was a good question, you know. Who is that guy? You know, I didn't realize until halfway through the year it was you, Drew. And then I was saying, I love your positivity on X, like the peace be with you and all that really good stuff that you would say to start my day. I'd always see it. And I'm like, that's a guy who I want to get to know. So, Drew, it's an honor again to have you on.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it. All of that. You too much, man. You humble me.
isn't that what's been kind of the bummer about the last few years is, like, I really feel like things have been so incredibly negative. I thought they were negative with Gar Pax. I think it's hit a new level lately, and, you know, to the point where it's just such a, I just hate being in this position of cheering for losses, and I kind of feel like that's where I've been for, it seems like, the vast majority of the last decade. Do you concur with that assessment?
I do, and I think that bleeds into where the conversation has gone in terms of Josh Giddey and did the Bulls win or lose the trade that involved Alex Caruso? Should they have gotten picks back? Can there be a backcourt that consists of Josh Giddey and Kobe White that actually, you know, has some success in the playoffs? Like, it's a little bit toxic. Like, sometimes I go through Twitter and on my timeline, I see certain things, and sometimes I just shake my head. It's kind of exhausting, man. It's not quite the LeBron James, Michael Jordan GOAT debate, but man, at certain times it feels just as, like, nauseating.
Mm-hmm. Specific to what? What debate specific do you think brings the most toxicity? Is it regarding the front office or certain players?
I would say the level of toxicity around Josh Giddey, and is he a winning player? Did the Bulls get enough back for him? What should the Bulls pay him? Can he be an all-star? Can he be someone who helps the Bulls get back to some level of prominence? Like, all of that, everything that kind of comes with Josh Giddey, the player, I think has gotten more toxic, I think, as the season went on.
Right.
Well, I can't agree more. And I really noticed it too. There's kind of like a battle, an internal battle between the pro Kobe White crowd, which I've always felt I've been like a banner of that. I've always said Kobe's got a Sistine Chapel like ceiling. And, you know, initially I was really anti Josh. It wasn't so much I was anti Josh Giddey. I just thought that the trade was so absolutely ridiculous that we weren't able to get any additional draft assets for a guy that was played out of the playoffs. You know, like, to me, I don't care if he makes 10 All-Star games. You can't justify that trade for a team that, you know, had too many assets to keep, that you weren't able to get anything else from it. And then you talk to anyone who covers the NBA, they all agree with that. But, you know, people are like getting offended. And, you know, and unfortunately, I probably was part of that toxic atmosphere, you know, Laban Legidiots and all these people that had this irresponsible kind of idea about the guy. But hey, he won me over. Like, by the end of the year, I think you'd have to be kind of, you know, a complete denier of reality to say, like, hey, this guy's not bad. Like, I don't want to see him walk off the team for nothing. Like, and, you know, so it's a tough call. And, but I did notice, I remember when I was on the CHGO show, in December, and I don't know if you recall, Kobe had an ankle injury, and it was like right at the end of November. And then he tried to come back. I think he missed one game. It happened against the Celtics. He missed one game. Then the next six games, he really had a rough stretch. And I'm on that show, and the questions coming in are of such venom and such anger about Kobe White, who had 18 points per game. His stats were basically identical to the previous year up until that point. And I'm just like, there is something wrong here at the fan base. There's this whole crowd that just wants to destroy Kobe and a whole crowd that wants to destroy Josh. And so you sense that too. You've seen that too. And, you know, I'm hoping that we all realize these guys can probably play together.
Yeah, I think fans just, they want something that they feel like they can really get behind. And I know there's portions of the fan base who do believe that Kobe and Josh can be a formidable backcourt for the future. But I think, you know, just in the circles that I run in and, you know, judging off another half of my timeline, I feel like most fans are still kind of like not on board where this thing seems to be heading. And I'm totally with you about Josh Giddey. I think, you know, it's easy to get caught up in, you know, when he's having a bad stretch of games or a good stretch of games, to go back to the trade and say, oh, we won the trade. Oh, well, we lost the trade. But I think you really have to measure the trade at what was on the table, or what was the context of the two players on the table when the trade was made. Mm-hmm. I've heard it said that, you know, Alex Caruso wasn't going to sign in Chicago, or, you know, Arturas didn't have leverage. But I feel like that's not bringing the total picture into light. Like you said, Josh was about to be put in a bench role, mm-hmm. which he was not agreeable to. Therefore, he wanted a trade. Like, to me, that that gave Arturas the upper hand in maybe asking for more in that trade. But I don't think he went as far as to ask for draft picks. I don't think it was that Pressey didn't give him up. I don't think AK, once he saw that he could get Giddey back, I don't think he had the presence of mind to try to get more in return. Like, he was good with just that. And I think, you know, that kind of feeds into this notion that he has, that he can build this next iteration of this Bulls team around young veterans with experience, which I have a lot of questions about.
Totally ridiculous. Yeah, because the whole young veterans without experience, or with experience, totally belies the fact, or you know, forgets that you eventually got to pay these guys. Mm-hmm. And part of the value of having these guys is you have them under an affordable deal for 5 years. Josh Giddey, we had 1 year where he was really underpaid, or, you know, relative to his performance, maybe accurately paid, at least for the first 52 games. Now he's going to be, at a minimum, paid, you know, according to the market, but we'll see where that goes. So that whole point that we only had him under control really for 1 year before he became a restricted free agent is more fuel for why we should have signed him, demanded some type of draft assets in addition to him.
Yeah, and then add to that the fact that Caruso was coming off back-to-back all defensive team nominations or selections. I think he shot his best percentage from three-point land in his career the year before. So it was like, man, you're getting like a hell of a – you're getting a superstar role player, you know?
Yeah.
Albeit one who's, you know, on the wrong side of 30 and can be injury-prone, but at the same token, like, he is what he is. You know what you're getting, and he's going to a team where he doesn't have to have the same amount of minutes on his shoulders, because it is a better team that has other players that – can contribute to winning. So I just think all of that, when you factor it in, it will always point back to Arturas not being the best negotiator when it comes to these trades.
100% true. And the last thing I will say about it too is, what team would not want Alex Caruso at that salary dollar amount after the Boston Celtics just won the title with a bunch of players who were kind of like, you know, mirror images, extremely, switchable on defense. You know, like, he's a role player as good as every role player on the Boston Celtics in terms of defensive ability to switch, guard multiple positions. It's just crazy when you think about it, because there's so many teams I know that would have been interested in it. But, you know, let's not go down that road. Big picture is, let's start out, if you don't mind, I'd like to get your opinion on Josh Giddey. Like, are you in favor of the Chicago Bulls signing Josh Giddey at, you know, $30 million per year, $25 million per year, or letting him test the market and see where it leads us?
I am in favor of Arturas going against what he did with Patrick Williams last summer and letting Patrick signed this deal that he did, what was like 5 years and with a player option on the last year without having Patrick test the market. Like I'm in favor of AK allowing Josh to see what teams are interested in the services and at what price. I think that would be the way to go about it. I asked AK about that at his postseason presser. I believe Casey Johnson followed up behind me after AK didn't answer the question. Which is right. You know, it's a business situation and you don't want to put your cards on the table necessarily. So AK avoided both questions, but, it'll be interesting to see what happens there. In terms of dollar figures, I don't know, man. I feel like Josh is en route to getting somewhere between $25 and $30 million from the Bulls this summer. Kudos to him for doing it, for showing out enough once the trade deadline passed and Zach was no longer on the team and it was truly kind of like his and Kobe's team. Kudos to him for showing out and putting up the numbers that he put up, for impacting winning the way he did, for changing the way that he attacked the rim. For the most part, he still had instances where, you know, he kind of flung the ball up there in haphazard fashion. But, yeah, I think, you know, we're all just kind of waiting for that $25 million plus a year figure to come out once they do sign Josh, but I do hope that they let him test the market and, you know, see if they can let the market set his price.
I think you and I both probably though would agree. I bet you he just throws down $30 million a year, 5 years, and then maybe even gives up player option in fifth year and just says, let's go. Because he hasn't shown, with the exception of Kobe White, who wasn't his draft pick, and, you know, to a lesser extent, obviously, also Io, who was kind of coming off a bad year. He hasn't shown a real desire to fight his draft picks and or his acquisitions in this way. And so, like, even the Vooch one, which I couldn't believe there was a third year attached to that. Like, all the guy just, that's what he's going to do. And I'm sure his excuse will be, like he did with Williams, well, there was Detroit last year, there was Charlotte, and I'm just like, give me a break. None of those teams were paying him 18. And if they were, you should look in the mirror and ask yourself, well, is this really the guy that we should be paying this? Like, then we're going to give him a 50-year player option. We'll see. We'll see what he does, but I think we both know. I think it's going to be 30 million. He'll start there, and then they might hem and haw and see if they can get a bigger deal, but I don't anticipate that either. Who else besides the Nets can pay him?
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question, because I think the Nets are the only team with, you know, the cap space to actually try to get Josh. That figure you threw out, I think that's the Jalen Suggs figure, right? The 5 for $150 million?
Yes.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what I expect, that he'll at least get that. It might even be, who knows? I mean, I know everybody goes quickly and points to quickly, but that was a mistake. Like, how can anybody – you don't just hand out a contract because, you know, where's your – you have leverage here too. You know, it's not just – you just don't look at the contract and say, hey, that's what Quickley got. I got to pay him that much. No, that was a mistake. So,
and again, that goes back to, you know, Arturis not always, you know, seeing what cards he has up his sleeve, or at least from afar that's what it appears to be. So that's why, you know – neither you or I or nobody else can really say with any certainty that he's going to let Josh kind of test the market. And we're all kind of sitting here like, is he or isn't he?
Do you feel, out of the two players, Kobe White and Josh Giddey, who do you feel was more valuable to the Bulls' success at the end of last season?
You know what? I think that Kobe White is the more impactful player. But if it makes sense, I would say Josh Giddey had a bigger impact on the latter half of the season for the Bulls, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Because he had the ball in his hand so much, because he can facilitate at a higher clip, because of the way that he can rebound the basketball, the way that he was attacking the basket and getting to the free throw line, which Kobe was doing too, to his credit. But I think that, you know, some of those last games down the stretch, you kind of saw what the team wasn't when Josh wasn't on the floor. Mm-hmm. And again, that last portion of the season, you know, the games in February and March and April, it's a tricky time to try to evaluate things, especially a player in Josh Giddey who you have to pay now going into the summer and the next season. But I think I would lean toward Josh in terms of the impact that he and Kobe had.
I'm really shocked to hear you say that. Like, I didn't even think it was close. I thought Kobe was the guy. And I just kind of come from this angle, like trying to help out my son's high school with scouting and, you know, just in my experience when I did coach at the kind of like the JV level at the junior high school level scouting opposition. It's always like, who's the best player on that team and who do we have to stop to win this game? I just can't imagine any team in the NBA saying, it's not Kobe White. Like, that's 1A, 1B. And then, you know, to me, it's a lot easier kind of to defend. I would just, you know, I'd never double Giddey. I'd just let him try to sag off and let him, you know, force him to hit the jumper. And, you know, which he did do at a very high degree at the end of the year. But big picture, is that sustainable? I don't know if it is. To me, it just seems like Kobe White's a much more difficult guard, difficult stop. And not only that, correct me if I'm wrong, you're around the team more than anyone else. Like, isn't he the leader of the team?
Yeah, I would say he's the vocal leader, both him and Io. But with Io, you know, suffering that shoulder injury, I think a lot of that burden fell onto Kobe, and he took it on willingly. To your point, though, I would ask you, and it's just one game, but I would ask you, who would you say was the Miami Heat's best defender?
Well, Bam Adebayo.
Now, who did Bam guard in that play-in game?
Yeah, they put him on Giddey so he could go help, though. That was a strategic. Very well done. Very well done. I got to admit, that was pretty well done. But I think that was a strategic move by the Heat, right? You know what I mean? Like, that's what they did when, if you watch, like the year before, or maybe it was 2 years ago, I did a breakdown in the last 3 minutes of the game. Yeah, it was 2 years ago when Zach LaVine had that great game against the Raptors, and the next game they lost in Miami in the play-in, the second play-in game. In the last 3 minutes of that game, this is when they had Pat Beverly on the team.
Mm-hmm.
All the Heat just, it was clear they had one strategy. Vooch can stand out at the 3-point line as long as he wants. We're going to put Bam on him, and he's going to be on a straight line wherever Zach's at as a backup to whoever was out on Zach. And I kind of feel that's what they tried to do with in this game also, is kind of just have Bam hang around the rim. I didn't see him go out of the paint much in that game at all. Do you disagree? You feel differently?
No, I agree. I didn't say that to kind of like poo-poo what you said, just to offer another perspective, because I agree with what you were saying, which is kind of, which makes it kind of a not a catch-22, but like I said, I think that Kobe is the better player, but I feel like Josh drove winning more. To how much of a degree, I don't know, but to your point, like schematically, Bam was like a spy, like in football, and go ahead.
They put Davion Mitchell on. To me, Davion Mitchell was their best perimeter defender by a mile. He was on, you know, Kobe for most of the game. So I thought it was more of a strategic move where they kept Bam, but that is a good point. You got me there. I'm sure all the Giddeyites are nodding, laughing at me right now at that one.
No, there's no gotcha stuff over here.
but you know what? And this is why it's so scary. Scary is probably too strong of a word, but I'm so hesitant to say that this team is going to be better than it's been with Kobe and Josh leading the backcourt, because you saw all the wounds, all the
warts. Yeah.
Warts in this playing game against the Heat, where Josh wasn't a reliable long distance shooter, where he wasn't able to get all the way to the rim and the Heat could kind of sag off of him, where you saw Kobe struggle mightily against the Heat's defense. Like you said, Davion Mitchell, the defense that he played, like, you know, Josh not being the best defender and kind of getting beat off the dribble right from the jump ball with Tyler Hero. Now, it wasn't just Josh. The whole team just seemed like two steps slow on a perimeter in that game, if not the entire season, with their lack of point of attack defenders, but, you know, it did very little, if anything, to answer the questions about, you know, what this team can be with those two in the backcourt.
Very well said. I felt like for the first half of the year, that was some of the worst defense I've ever seen from a Chicago Bull, was Josh Giddey on the perimeter. I thought it was an abomination. And, you know, you cannot win with him, and his backline defender is Vucevic. It's like, that's a complete disaster, you know, waiting to happen. So that was kind of also my issue with the acquisition, is like, I think it could work, but it's going to take a lot of tap dancing, you know, from this front office who are wearing these muddy, you know, construction boots. It's just going to be too hard to do. And, yeah, you know, and he did play better defense as the year went on, but it's always going to be an issue. He's got a pretty low ceiling on the defensive end. And, you know, I know a lot of people are probably shouting at, listening to this, saying, well, Kobe's in the same boat. Well, that's all the more reason we got to figure it out. Like, can these two guys succeed together as our backcourt? And if they are, I don't think there's any doubt. You got to move away from Vooch and get a real defensive center in here.
I agree wholeheartedly. If you know, presumably Josh is going to be a part of this team's future, maybe Kobe as well. Either way, you have to have a big who can not only defend the rim, but also switch out on the perimeter and hold his own for a few seconds until guards can recover on screens. Like, that's an absolute must. And that's part of the reason why I myself was skeptical of the trade and still am kind of leery of what Josh can be, because he influences, you know, what you can build around, or what you have to do to build around him on a team. Now, granted, like, almost every player in the NBA, there's a give and take to what they bring or what they give up on either side of the ball. But with Josh, is his offense ever going to be significant enough where his defensive deficiencies aren't quite as costly? And I still don't know the answer to that question. You know, I worry about, you know, what we ultimately find out here in the years to come, when and if he signs this extension with the Bulls.
I can't agree more. I wish he would bulk up and kind of embrace the role of maybe like a four on the defensive end. That's my big issue. It's always been the issue with him. It's just like, on the defensive end, it's such a difficult ask to your coach to figure out how to work around him defensively. You know, it's really rough. And that's what we saw at Oklahoma City. You look at Oklahoma City, like, oh, this is a perfect team for him. They got shooters everywhere. They're number one in the league in three-point percentage. You got guys that could switch. You know, why didn't it work out? You got a big that can pull guys out. It's like, if it didn't work out there, how's it going to work out here? You know, and to his credit, he did improve his three-point shot into an insane point at some points at the end of the year. But I don't know if that's sustainable. I don't think anybody feels good watching him launch three-pointers. You know, and what's going to happen when he's being guarded. I mean, that said, I kind of come to the point where I saw enough from him that I was like, all right, you know, I'll be fine. I know it sounds weird, but I actually enjoyed watching him at some points at the end of last year, and kind of came around a little bit to the point where I'm like, I could enjoy watching this guy and Kobe play together. I still wonder if that's the best direction to go. And it can't work until we improve the front court defense. Let's get a little bit into, if you don't mind, a sidetrack, because I did bring this up on Twitter. I was kind of shocked at the results of this. And I think there's kind of like an internal debate. Like, let me just say, I'm a huge Kobe White fan. I don't want him to trade him. But I do feel like you could probably trade him and get an awful lot this year. I don't know how you can look at the Orlando Magic and the Houston Rockets and say, man, Kobe White wouldn't help those teams offensively. And would you be open? Do you feel that's a possibility that the Chicago Bulls will move him this summer with 1 year left on his contract? And the second part of that is, what would you get in return? I think you can get something substantial for a player who was the Eastern Conference Player of the Month, who for now 2 years in a row has kind of proved himself, as opposed to, you know, everybody was saying, well, he could have got more from him last year. And I'm like, well, he didn't really have that much of a runway of greatness. You know what I mean?
Yeah, It's tricky, because I'm in the same boat in that I thought that AK should have moved off of Kobe at this past season's trade deadline. You know, I think there was some talk of there being several teams who were interested in him. It was rumored that New York might have been interested in him. But now, if a team is to trade for him this summer or at the trade deadline, they're only going to get him for one postseason run before they themselves have to pay him, you know? So I wonder how much that's going to take away in a potential deal for his services. Whereas, had he been moved before, how much more AK might have been able to squeeze from a team, you know? And I'm with you, like, the Magic, they finished in the bottom of the league in three-point attempts and three-point percentage the last two seasons. The Pistons, Tim Hardaway Jr., Malik Beasley, and Dennis Schroeder are all unrestricted free agents. Like, I think there's a market for him, but again, AK kind of has already sunk the most he could possibly get from Kobe, who is probably, outside of Modis, their biggest trade chip, I would guess. Would you agree with that?
Unequivocally. Yeah, I think Modis is number one and Kobe's a close second. I do. I understand what you're saying. I heard this from Doug, too, and I think even Will Gottlieb said this about, you know, they should have moved him either last summer or at the trade deadline. But my counter to that is he was part of the month in March. Like, he really upped his game, like, significantly after the All-Star game. So I think, you know, if you're looking at the Chicago, if you're looking at Kobe White, I feel like his value improved significantly after the All-Star break, where he was, you know, he's the best player in the Eastern Conference for a month. That's not, you know, something that anyone should just be like, oh, whatever. No. Look at the history of that award. Like, no bums win that for a month. You might do it for a week, not a month. So, like, I think there's a lot. I brought this up. The reason I mentioned this is I brought this up on Twitter. Like, I've loved Reed Shepard. I think he's an incredible player, and I'm kind of like shocked why he didn't get more playing time this year. I thought he could have helped the Rockets. And like I said, well, why not Reed Shepard, a couple of their draft assets and cap filler? Cause they're almost making the same amount of money. I think Reed's making 10 million. He's making 12, Kobe. And everybody's like, there's no way Houston. No way. I think you're selling Kobe White short. Like, what are you talking about? Kobe White is like a really good player who could significantly help that team. Reed Shepard's not even in a rotation. Like, what are we talking about? Like, I don't care where he was drafted in a horrible draft. I think that's a good deal. What say you?
I think from the Bulls side, that would be a great deal. But I think I've read or heard that the Rockets, despite him not being in a rotation, are in love with Reed Shepard and are just bringing him along slowly. You know, Fred VanVleet was still there. So there was a certain level of command of the game that Fred has that Reed still has to learn. And I don't think they would try to use Reed to get Kobe. I think if they were to trade Reed, they would be looking at a bigger fish, like a Durant or possibly a Giannis Antetokounmpo. So I don't think they would spend Reed on Kobe, if that makes sense. Like, they would go bigger game hunting with a prospect like him.